The subject of our discussion this time is a fascinating subject, that of the chilazon ha-chelis, the chelis fish of meal, which we'll discuss exactly what. Chelis is a blue dye which the Torah commands us to incorporate in the tzitzis. The mitzvah of tzitzis is to place strings on the four corners of any four-cornered garment. And the Torah tells us that aside from having a number of white strings, or strings that are the color of the garment, as the Gemara discusses, but is also required to include a string of chelis, a string that is colored in blue dye. Not exactly clear how many strings. Rashi and Tosfos and Argamon actually say two strings. Two blue strings and two plain strings. The blue strings are dyed with a very expensive indelible dye named Techeles. Techeles dye, although it's expensive, was required for the tzitzis as long as Techeles, this dye, was available. The Torah tells us that if it's not available, then put on tzitzis that are not dyed. That will suffice. Okay, we're going to discuss exactly what it is that is used for tchelis, for producing the tchelis dye, because it's not at all clear what exactly is supposed to be used. Yes, we'll get to this question that you're discussing also, if it's a shellfish, if it's not, and why and what. And let's have a little historical background on this. Before we start, when exactly was the tchelis lost? Until what year was the tchelis still used in the tzitzis? The answer to this seems to be that tchelis was used until approximately the 600s or so. 600 years after the Common Era, which represents some time along the times of the during which the Babylonian Talmud was being written. The Midrashim that already mentioned Nignas HaTchelis, the Tchelis has been hidden away, is no longer available, even though the Gemara mentions that Tchelis was very hard to come by in the times of the Amoran. Nevertheless, it was available under certain circumstances. So we see it becoming less and less common, less and less frequent, and then disappearing practically at the time of the Muslim conquest. The Islam was not very respectful for any items that were not an integral part of their own religion, and the tchelis dye was not important to them. They did not protect its production. They didn't care about its production. It entirely stopped when they conquered the Mediterranean region. The reason that the Mediterranean region controlled the tchelis is because, as the Torah and the Gemara tell us, the tchelis fish, the creature which produces the tchelis dye, was commonly found along the Mediterranean coast. Specifically along the northern Mediterranean coast, in the area of northern Israel. That's where the tchelis dye-making creature was found, and that's where tchelis was produced. And therefore, whoever had control of that region had control of tchelis production in general. We know from not only Jewish literature, but from Greek literature, that there is such a thing as tchelis. In fact, there are two different dyes. There are three different expensive dyes, indelible dyes, that were used at the time. They were known as Tchelis, Argaman, and Talad Shani. The Torah mentions these three. Tchelis is blue, according to what we find in the Rishonim, blue or bluish green. The Argaman is purplish or violet, and Talad Shani is scarlet or red. Talad Shani is produced from a certain a certain worm, well, a certain worm that's found in oak trees, the curlies, and the production of Tzalah Shani also was lost to us, just as the production of the other two, Tchelet and Arkaman, were lost to us, until very, very recently, when people became interested in it, and when the new interest was aroused, and scientists, as well as people, religious people, tried to reproduce the production of these different dyes. The religious significance of this is obvious. Tchelos is needed for tzitzis. The other two will be needed to produce Bidei Kahuna when the Beis Hamikdash is rebuilt. At that time, presumably, Mashiach will show us exactly how to do it, and therefore our efforts may be extraneous. But if we can produce Tchelos before the Beis Hamikdash is built, perhaps we can wear it in our tzitzis. Now, since the Tchelos production was entirely lost, and there's no clear description of it, we have to use a lot of guesswork based on whatever sources we have. As I said, the Greek sources also mention the dyes, the Tchelos and Argamon. The blue and purple dyes are referred to as Hyacinthus and Purpura, with Hyacinthus the Tchelos and Purpura the purplish color. Exact instructions for producing these are not clearly written. One reason is because the craftsmen, the dye masters, used to keep these as a secret. It was not publicly known, perhaps even in the times when Tchelos was produced, how to produce it. Since it was a very expensive dye, it was very rare, the craftsmen would keep it a trade secret and would keep among themselves the exact directions for producing it, and perhaps as many details of its production as possible were kept secret. We do have early works, early Greek works that discuss, plenty others that discuss the different dyes and how to produce them. Yet this is still not clear from the works. To look to the Gemara and try to find hints, we find Braitha in the Gemara in Menachos that tries to describe pretty clearly what exactly the Tchelos is. It's clear from many places in Chazal and in the sages' writings that the fish or the creature that produces Tchelos dye is named Chilazon. Says the Braitha, Chilazon Zehu Gufo Domeliyam. This Chilazon, the body of it is similar to the sea. Uviyaso Domeladag, and the creature itself is similar to a fish. Va'ola Echad L'Shem Shana. It only rises from the sea once every 70 years. Another Gersa, the Gersa of the Brisa, is once every 7 years. Uvidomo Sovim Tchelos. It uses blood to dye Tchelos. The fika of some of the current, since it only rises every 70 years or so, it's rather expensive. Okay, that's the way the Bible describes it. And it doesn't tell us very much about the fish. More than that, other than that, it's similar to the sea. And it's somewhat like a fish. Not very clear what that means exactly. We have a few other Gemaras that discuss Tchelos. It's similar to the sea. We would assume means that it's the color of the sea. It's greenish blue or something like that. It says that it's very rare. It only rises once every 70 years. It says in the Gemara that the fish in the Chilazon was caught with nets, which are lowered into the water. And it says also that the dye is extracted while the Chilazon is alive, so that it should be of a better quality. An important hint is a Gemara in Bava Metzia that says that the Tchelos color is indistinguishable from indigo. However, indigo is a cheap dye because it washes out. It's the Gemara tells us in Menachos and other places. Indigo is kala ilan, in the words of the Gemara. Indigo is a dye that's less expensive because it's washable. It bleeds, while Tchelos is indelible. It remains. It doesn't change with time. Then therefore people would try to fool others by buying the cheaper kala'ila, the cheaper indigo, and using that as chelas. But that doesn't work. What is not, it does not fulfill the mitzvah with that dye. We find that in order to get the dye, to extract the dye, one has to smash a chilazon, which tells us that it must have some sort of hard shell of some sort, not like a normal fish. When it says that the blood is used for producing chelas, the Rishonim explain that they prove from the Gemara that it doesn't mean the blood itself, the life blood, rather it means instead a liquid that is preserved in a sac inside of the animal. Okay, let's see what we can make of all this. You could say that there are three different categories that we could make determining what exactly the fish of the Tchelus is. The first category would be a kosher fish. Second category would be a fish, but not a kosher one. And the third one would be a snail. Okay. We do find one Rishon that seems to say it's a kosher fish. Rabbeinu Bachya in Shmos, who is a Talmud of the Rashba, writes that the Tzolas Shani, although it says it's produced from a worm, it can't really be produced from the worm itself, because the worm is not kosher, and how can you use a non-kosher creature to produce the dye that is used for the mikdash? We know that all the products used in the mikdash should be made from kosher animals. For this reason, even the skins which were used in the mikdash or the mishkan were only used for kosher, only kosher animal skins were used. Even the tefillin that we use for a mitzvah also must be made from a kosher animal. We use tefillin straps from a cow. We say that it has to be miramutza b'ficha, from something that can be eaten. If so, he says, how can you extract dye from a non-kosher bug? It must be that the berries that it climbs on are red, or something to that effect. It can't be that the worm itself is red, and it produces a red dye. Following through on this form of logic, we have to conclude that if the tchelus is a sea creature, it must be a kosher fish. Kosher fish has fins and scales, and Rebbeinu Bachya is then presuming that the tchelus is a kosher fish, is a chilazon of the tchelus, is a kosher fish. We do not know of any kosher fish that produce dyes of this sort, and many Rishonim, the Achronim discuss this idea of whether a dye must be minamutza b'ficha, must be something that is produced from an animal that can be eaten, and conclude that it does not necessarily have to be produced from an animal that can be eaten. Only the items which are parts of the animal itself must be from an animal that can be eaten. But the dye, which is just a color, is just produced from the fish, does not have to come from a kosher animal. And if so, we can use the dye even from a non-kosher animal. If it's a snail, obviously it's not kosher. And even if it's a non-kosher fish, that'll also fit the requirements according to this understanding. Okay. Well, we'll see exactly what fish this is. Let's go on to the next stage. Is it a non-kosher fish? Before getting to the question of whether it was a snail. Okay. What non-kosher fish would fit the bill? About 100 years ago, about 100 years ago, the Radzina Rebbe of Hanotena Liner, Radzin, who was a tremendous god, a big genius, as well as a person with a lot of eagerness to fill the mitzvahs the best way possible, and he decided that he's going to seek out what the chilazon of the chelas is. what is that fish that produces its chalas? Now, around that same time, someone, a Jewish zoologist who was doing research into the subject, proposed in his book that perhaps it's a squid, perhaps it's the cuttlefish. Cuttlefish means a fish from which certain medicines are produced. It's a squid that's sort of transparent in color. Color changes based on the angle and the way that you view it. And as all squid, it has a certain dye which it shoots out to confuse enemies. That makes an obvious candidate for a dye-producing fish. So this researcher in his book, Talmudic Zoology, thought that perhaps that's a chilazot. The Rambina Rebbe, whether he saw it or heard about it, or whether he came to the conclusion on his own, decided that if someone's doing research into this, then let's determine it halachically. He decided that the squid must be the fish. In fact, he wrote 3 books on the subject and described his quest in detail. How he said, first, I'm going to describe what the Torah tells us, what the sages tell us about the chilazot. And he lays down a couple of guidelines. Then he says, now I'm going to go to the undersea aquarium in Italy to try to find something that fits these criteria. And then he says, now I found it. It's the cuttlefish. It fits everything. And he goes and explains how the cuttlefish explains all the words of the sages and fits beautifully into every part of anywhere where the subject is described. Because he's such a genius, though, he was able to produce some sometimes very far-off answers for certain sayings of the sages to show how they fit in with his conclusion. So sometimes he bent the words a little bit, but the books themselves are really wonderful reading, and it was an amazing idea to try to find this and produce chalas from it in the first place, and he really did amazing work on the subject, and very in-depth work on the subject, collecting everything and anything that was ever said about chalas, and trying to work them through to show what exactly the fish that produces its chalas is. Now, how did he make the dye from this fish? He hung up signs in Italy. He couldn't make a blue dye from it. The color is really a brownish black. It's actually a brown color that's made from the ink, or the sepia, as it's referred to scientifically. The sepia of the squid does produce a certain brown dye, but he couldn't make anything blue, and brown is the wrong color. He went around to dye masters in Italy and said, anyone that could produce a blue dye from this will be rewarded. I'm sure that some blue dye can be produced from this. Well, finally, one dye master showed him, take a look, I'll throw in some squid, I'll throw in a couple of white different materials. Obviously, they're white, they can't change the color. And lo and behold, out comes a blue dye. And Hadirab was overjoyed. He practiced this production of the dye until he had it perfected. And he made a factory to produce it. And all of his chassidim, as well as many others, notably the breath of the chassidim, began to wear chalas once again. Chalas was back in Kol Yisrael after a 1,200-year gap. Well, that's the way the situation remained until the times of Rav Herzog, until shortly afterwards, a generation later, when Rav Herzog investigated the subject. So let's first see, does this fit into all the criteria that we mentioned? It does fit into most of the criteria. However, a number of the criteria do not match up. First of all, the dye is supposed to be indelible, whereas the blue that was produced, which actually has a chemical name, it's known as Prussian blue, it's a dye that fades, it bleeds, when it's scrubbed with common detergents. Also, a problem that's more serious is that the squid is absolutely no more common in the northern Mediterranean Sea than elsewhere. The only place that's slightly more common is maybe around Italy, But otherwise, it's certainly not more common in northern Israel. It's also a common fish that should not necessarily be very expensive. It's easy to catch, and it's not a very expensive diet, as the Prussian blue itself. So, or at least the fish, the diet produced from the squid, the brown diet, the other things, they're not expensive diet especially. So, it doesn't really fit in so well with all the criteria. These are the major problems. Rav Herzog, who tried to investigate the subject, wrote as his doctoral thesis on the subject, which he created, called Biblical Porpurology. He gave a name for this field, Porpurology, which means the study of purpura. Purpura is the Greek name for the purple dye. And the study of the blue and purple dyes of the Talmud and of the Bible, he named Biblical Purpurology. He wrote a doctoral thesis on this. Rav Herzog was an extremely well-educated man and a brilliant, brilliant person who knew many languages and was able to read the original Greek and the Latin. And besides that, he was familiar with many different subjects, and he was well-versed and able to do proper research in archaeology and zoology and many other fields. When he tried to investigate the blue dye that the Radzina Rebbe produced, he sent a letter to the son of the Radzina, to the person who was then the head of the Hasidim, asking him to please send him a sample of the Tchelos, because he's doing research into it. He was sent a sample, which he sent to a lab. The lab wrote back to him, this is not a dye produced from the ink of the squid. Now, this was a pretty serious clash. Here, the lab says this is not a dye produced by the ink of a squid. And the Radzina Rebbe sends it to him as a dye from the squid. He sends the Herzog sends back a letter to Radzina Rebbe's son saying, please, I understand that you want to keep this a secret and that you don't want this to become public knowledge. However, I'm asking you to please trust me. You can be certain that I will not reveal any of your secrets to anybody without your knowledge. I want to do research into this matter and find out all the various possibilities for Tchelos. Well, the Rebbe sent back him a letter saying, almost insulted, of course we trust you, Rav Herzog, who was the chief rabbi of Ireland at the time, Rav Herzog. Of course we trust you. Of course we trust you. And what you say, and we sent you a perfect sample of the citrus that we use. It was produced from the ink of the cuttlefish, of the squid. And here's the exact recipe. And he writes in the recipe, pour in the ink, pour in a couple of other things, among them iron filings and other things, and then pour in, and then heat it up until it's as hot as Gehenna. That's the way they describe it. It's like 800, 900 degrees. And then mix it together, whatever, and after a while you dip in the, it turns blue, and you dip in the wool, and it dyes it blue. Well, Rav Herzog got the sample, and again sent it to the lab. The lab sent back that it was not produced from the ink of the squid, and by now he was totally confused. He didn't know who to trust and who not to trust. He sort of put this aside and said, well, obviously the labs don't know everything, because he knew the Rebbe wasn't lying to him, but he didn't really know what to make of it. Later, the irony of this is that the production of the Radzina Tchelos was lost by World War II, when all the Hasidim were killed and most of the Hasidim were killed and the Tchelos factory was destroyed. And it was completely lost until Rav Herzog was the chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael, Rav Herzog called over from Radzina Hasidim and told him, if you're interested in producing the Tchelos that the Radzina Rebbe made, you should know that I happen to have the recipe. Since the Radzina had sent him the recipe for his research, and he still had it, he was able to reproduce the Tchelos production. He gave the recipe to the Radzina Hasidim, who actually reproduced it, and now they continue to wear Tchelos based on the original recipe. They later came into Rav Herzog to now prove to him that the Rebbe was right. They knew that after Herzog's death, Herzog told them, I guess, I'm not sure, but this is what the Rebbe sent me, you could try it out. They knew about Herzog's death, they brought in a portable oven, they brought in some wool, in front of him they poured in the squid, they poured in the ink, and lo and behold, when they dipped in the wool, out came blue dye. Well, what are we to do with the lab report? So what's interesting is the following. The lab report was right, and the Tina Rebbe was right. Why is that? Prussian blue can be produced by any nitrogen-containing compound if the nitrogen can be separated from the rest of the compound by boiling it to such a high temperature that the nitrogen bonds break. A fish, which is a living creature, contains nitrogen bonds, as does a steak or anything coming from a living creature, and many other items. In fact, a simple lab test that's used by first-year chemistry students for determining the presence of nitrogen is to see if it turns blue when you separate the nitrogen and you put in the iron filings and mix it together in the way that the Razina Rebbe produced the talent. What the lab had said to Herzog was that this isn't the ink of a squid. What's producing this color is nitrogen. Who knows what it's from? Makes no difference if it's from a squid or from anything else. Nitrogen is producing this. But it's not the ink of the squid. The ink of the squid produces a brown-colored dye. On the other hand, it's true that the squid can also produce this Prussian blue, this blue dye. It's not the squid that's producing it, though. In fact, anything else can also be used. Anything that contains nitrogen can produce the same dye. It is very unlikely that the Torah would tell us to use the blood of a certain fish if the tentacle of the fish or any other cutlet, any other animal could be used to produce the same color. And this is a very strong minus, a strong mark against the Ranzina's the Ranzina's suggestion for the identity of talus. And so what is the talus? We move on to the snails. Rav Herzog found in the writings of the Greeks that it was a snail, and indeed in the writings of the sages also, there are a number of sources saying that it was a snail. Rashi writes that it was a talas, meaning a worm, or it could also mean a slug. it's clear in the Drushan that it was a slug that had a shell around, didn't it? In other words, a snail. A number of Rishonim refer to it clearly as a snail. Or in fact, some of them say the word chilazon means snail in general, and chilazon had the chelas, refers to the particular snail that produces the chelas. So Rav Herzog went around looking to find the snail that produces the blue color. Well, an interesting twist of history was that also at the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century, interesting twist was that around not long before the 19th century, the fact that a certain snail produces a blue color was rediscovered. That produces a dye. Some say that someone saw a dog eating the snail, and they saw a certain color, a red color appearing and a purple color appearing in his lips. There's a certain group of snails, Murex, Murex trunculus, and there's another Murex, and there's another snail as well, three snails, that produce a purplish color where the color is produced when it is extracted from a gland on the snail. There's a certain gland on the snail that when the gland is ruptured, as soon as the contents are exposed to the sunlight, begin changing colors rapidly in succession and ending up in a purplish color. Actually producing a dye from that was not attempted until later. But it was found that this they can produce a blue dye that can be used to dye wool, an indelible dye. One of the snails produced a more reddish purplish one, while the others were a more purplish bluish one, bluish type of dye. There's strong archaeological evidence to show that this was actually used in the production of dye. the vast, divest from 2,000 years ago were found in the area of the northern coast of Israel and Lebanon, coast of Lebanon, where the divest still had a purple ring around them from the dinos in them, and there are large piles of murex shells next to the divest, showing a clear connection between the shell and the dye. Obviously, such a dye was being produced at the time. What's important is that the snail which produces this dye is much more commonly found along the northern Mediterranean. Right now, at present, it reaches all the way along the northern Mediterranean coast, past Greece, Italy, but very possibly 2,000 years ago was more commonly found along the Israeli northern coast and Lebanon, coast of Lebanon, much more than the rest of the northern Mediterranean coast. In the southern coast of Israel, they're very few and far between. And this fits perfectly into the description of Chazal that say that it's from Haifa and north you'll find the people that hunt the chilazon. In fact, the Phoenicians were named Phoenicia because they produced this purple dye, and the word Phoenicia apparently refers to the purple dye in their language. A serious problem with this would be that these iron fish which are caught in nets, and our Gemara seems to say that the chilazon is caught in a net. Tosfos in fact says that it wriggles around and it's hard to extract the chelos because of its wriggling, which certainly sounds like it's a fish, maybe the cuttlefish that's the Radzina thought. Yet according to, if it's the snail, it doesn't wriggle around. It's not hard to remove the gland, and it certainly shouldn't have to be caught in nests. Snails don't move that fast that they catch them in nests. A possible answer for the nest problem is that till today, these fish, the chilazon, is actually hunted with baited nets. You don't actually have to wait for the fish, the chilazon, the snails to swim into the net, but rather the net attracts the snails who come to the baited net, and then you just pick up the net. So if so, it's not really the net that's catching them by not letting them go through, but rather it's just attracting them. You don't really have to have a net. I suppose you could use strings as well. So it's not so clear still what exactly the Gemara means. Perhaps, in fact, the Yerushalmi might be arguing with the Gemara, because in the Gemara Bavli, the Gemara says that what is chayev for sun, for capturing the chilazon. Right, it's the first time for catching the chilazon. Right, and that also would seem to be problematic. What is that? Chayev on Shabbos. It says one chayev on Shabbos for catching the chilazon. What is chayev on Shabbos for catching an animal that's running away? If it's running away and you catch it, then you are chayev, you're obligated to bring a carbon on Shabbos. Catching it means preventing it from getting away. If an animal cannot run, it is lame, it cannot move, it doesn't have legs, or something, the Gemara talks about blind grasshoppers that don't see you trying to catch it, one is not obligated for catching them. If the chilazon is a snail, one should not be obligated for catching them. It could be that the Gemara actually understands it to be a fish, whereas the Yerushalmi, Tosfos brings the Yerushalmi that says that one is not chayef for catching a chilazon. Perhaps the Yerushalmi does not learn the chilazon is something that's caught in nets and understands it to be a snail, and therefore says one is not chayef for catching it, and that is not caught in nets. In any case, it could be that there is a disagreement among the various midrashic sources as to what exactly produced the chilazon after the actual dye-making procedure was lost. One thing that is also very unclear about the chilazon is the statement in the Gemara that it rises once every 70 years. What does it mean it rises from the sea 177 of the years? These snails are always available. It's true that you have to maybe dig down a little into the sea. They hide themselves under the bed of the sea in water that's about a meter and a half high off the coast. There are two seasons in which they're more plentiful, and that's in the spring and the fall, when the water is not too hot and not too cold, and they climb out and they populate the seafloor. It's still hard to find them because they match so well the seafloor, because of the fouling of the seafloor. In other words, the things that are stuck to the seafloor stick to them as well, and therefore they look identical to the seafloor. So you have to really get used to finding them. What does it mean it rises? It's not clear. There is a possibility, however, that if we allow 70 years to pass, we'll see mass migrations of these particular snails onto the mountains, perhaps, in the nearby areas. Perhaps they climb out of the sea once every 70 years, and otherwise it's hard to catch them, and that's what it means. That's very expensive, because the only time that it's easy to catch them is once every 70 years. We'll have to determine this only by waiting and watching. Otherwise, we still don't know how that fits the criterion. Another problem is that the dye which is produced from these snails is purple and not blue. Purple is not the appropriate color. The color of the pteris is supposed to be blue. That's pretty clear, especially from the fact that it's compared to indigo. Well, interestingly, someone, I know Elsner from the Aquatic Institute here in Israel, accidentally discovered that if the dye is not produced under lab conditions indoors, but rather it's produced outside and exposed to the sun, then the sun reduces certain chemical bonds and makes the dye come out blue. In fact, the dye comes out identical to indigo. The dye that's produced is identical to indigo. The chemical which the snail produces is dibroma-indigo, meaning indigo with two bromide atoms on in the molecules. And those bromide atoms separate when it's exposed to the sun during the dye-making process. The dye which is produced is then blue and very similar to, or identical to, the blue of the indigo. If so, we have been able to make a blue dye from it, and in fact today there's an institute, the Tales Institute, which is producing this in mass production, and we have links to it, or we'll put up links to it on our site on the internet, and they have their own site, tekhelet.com, where or COIL, where they sell the dye that they produce. It is rather expensive. It takes a large number of snails to produce even one tsetse. It could take 30 snails to produce one set of tsetses. Yeah, the snails themselves are hard to get. They are eaten in certain places. I've not heard that the streets of Lebanon are paved with this, as someone says, but I, as one of you mentioned, but I did see that the snails are eaten as a delicacy in certain countries. And in fact, that's where the Tales Institute buys them and imports them from, since they're a protected species over here in Israel, and the hunting is very limited. In any case, this seems to be the most likely candidate based on archaeological studies. There have, unfortunately, not been any archaeological evidence to show that there's a blue dye that was produced in these vats from these particular snails. We have particular snails, or in particular Amyrus trunculus, whose dye produces a bit more blue than the others. It turns blue faster than the others. However, no evidence has been shown that there were blue dyes produced from this. There have been purple dye found, as I mentioned, but nothing blue. It was a blue dye that was found in the Bar Kokhba caves. Upon chemical investigation, it was found to be a mixture between indigo and the red dye, and together they produced this blue dye. That's rather interesting, though. They claim that chemically they can tell for certain the difference between indigo and between a dye produced from the snail, because some of the chemical bonds of the snail's dye will not be broken down. On the other hand, we see from the words of Chazal that indigo is a dye that can be washed out. And I wouldn't expect that to remain over the thousands of years in a Bar Kokhba cave. It was probably an indelible dye that they found, an indelible indigo, which they found in the Bar Kokhba cave. Indigo is in fact indelible today. Obviously, in the times of the sages, they did not know how to produce indelible indigo, perhaps because the chemical reaction necessary to make it become absorbed by the wool, which is a chemical reaction which breaks down the dye, reduces it so that it could become water soluble. That chemical production was not known to them. When it came to the snail, they figured out how to produce dye from it and how to reduce or break down the chemical, because on the snail itself there's certain bacteria that are able to reduce the dye when they are soaked together for a long enough time. However, an indigo plant perhaps didn't have such bacteria in it. And therefore, it's possible that what they think is indigo really was the snail produced dye, because they did not know at that time how to make indigo indelible. And if they found an indigo there, perhaps it really is the tcheilos dye from the fish, from the snail, as opposed to the indigo made from the plant. There are a number of questions that we see still in the air. It's not clear 100% whether this is the snail that once produced tcheilos, but it's pretty clear. Some questions remain, particularly from the Gemara Bavli, the question of whether it was more common, more frequently found every 70 years or not is a question that remains. Also the question of what exact color of blue is the color that's supposed to be worn is not clear. If there is a particular blue, is it supposed to be a dark blue or a light blue? Certainly the tcheilos, the way it's made today, is not the way that it was made once. It's not made in the old-fashioned way, rather it's made with chemicals, which we know that are able to reduce the dye and make it become absorbed properly in the garment. Is there any other possibility for identifying the chilazim? There is one more possibility. The Hertzog himself discovered that there's actually a snail that's blue. Now, we have to remember the Gemara Baya said that the snail, the body of the animal that produces tcheilos, is blue, is the color of the sea, is like the sea. According to the interpretation that it's referring to the murex, the previous snail, it will be difficult to explain why it's similar to the sea, because the outside of it is white, inside it's sort of red and white, or brown and white. And there's nothing really blue about the outside of the shell. And this bothered the Herzog a lot. Some claim that when it says it's like the sea, it means that it looks similar enough to the bottom of the sea that one cannot tell the difference, meaning that it has the sea fouling, which is not blue. Others say maybe it means that the shell goes in and out, producing the form of waves of the sea. Another possibility. The perfect sound is actually a snail that has a blue shell, and it actually has a dye that it produces similar to a squid. And the dye is actually blue. And not only that, but it's very uncommon. It's found in the Mediterranean, and it generally floats in nets in the middle of the sea, and it's not commonly found on land or near land. But every few years, when a large storm occurs, it is washed ashore. And this would fit in beautifully with many of the words of the sages on the matter. That was his personal suggestion. Perhaps this is the chilazot ha-tcheilos. There's no archaeological evidence, of course. Recently, chemists tried to produce a dye from this secretion of the snail that he chose, which is called jamsina, and they were not able to produce any dye from it. They were able to reduce it and make it usable for dyeing wool, and therefore we remain with the previous suggestion that the most likely candidate is this murex, despite the many questions that we have which remain. So that's the candidate that is used today to produce whatever tcheilos is being made by the tcheilos institution, whereas the Radzina has even until today used